this episode, I want to cover a bit more on the nature of evidence. The evidence for spiritualism is profound. There's quite a lot of it. The nature against it is almost non-existent. You can't look at a graveyard and a dead body and say, that's the end of the soul. The soul appears to continue to carry on after death, and mediumship gives us a lot of evidence to support that. And there is no science that completely denies it. So there's a lot of smoke, but not everyone can see the fire. And a handful of people that can see the fire, we can't say how it started or who started it. But we can only assume that through spirit communication and from the history of mankind, that there are higher powers at work, that there is what we would call a God. How you perceive that is a personal experience rather than being told it's X, Y, or Z. But God is beyond our comprehension. What isn't beyond our comprehension is the communication from our loved ones. They provide evidence. They tell us about themselves. They show themselves. They give thoughts, words, and ideas. And they try to let us know about things that are going on in our lives to show that they're with us and show that they're active in our lives still. And they do this to give us an idea of what we are, that we are spirit, and that we will continue after this life, but this life is extremely important. That even though we're spiritual beings and we come from a more spiritual world and will return there, there's a very important reason why we were born to have experiences on earth. And that's the point of the communication. But the actual communication itself, like I say, it relies on evidence. And evidence is such that you want to establish who did what, where, when, and how. That's the basis of all investigations and journalism. Examples you'll see in the newspaper often are of events that have happened. Let's say there's a robbery in a chemist, because my local chemist got robbed over and over again, and it ended up in the newspapers. And I saw two different reports on the same thing, depending on the bias of the journalist. So we established who did what, where, when, and how. Two men broke into the back. They took a load of drugs, electrical goods, and high-value items. And the CCTV footage saw two men. They found footprints. They might have found fingerprints and DNA. So they established who. We know what they took because the chemist does regular stock checks, so they know what was missing. We know where it was because the chemist has an address. And the CCTV footage also let us know when it happened. And even without that, we can establish that it happened sometime after the chemist shut the evening before and before they opened the next morning. So you can round it down generally, or you can find something specific like an alarm or CCTV footage. And we know how they did it, because they forced the back door. All this can be established. The way it gets reported then can be biased one way or another. A journalist or newspaper who wants to support the ideology of the conservatives will want more policing and put people in jail and not think very much about the criminal and worry more about the crime. And a more left-leaning newspaper will probably want to spend less money on policing and more money on rehabilitation for the criminal. They'll see the criminal as a victim as much as the chemist. So how the journalist then presents the evidence is going to manipulate you to go towards their bias. They're going to focus on certain things and ignore others. And the opposing view is going to do the opposite generally. So how evidence is presented to you can seriously affect how you receive the information and how you are led to believe one way or another. So we have to look at evidence very carefully. We have to divorce ourselves of an agenda. And One of the things that comes up is the question why. We can figure out who did what, where, when, and how, but why they did it is down to so many different facets. First of all, we know they did it for the money and the drugs, but we can only assume that that's what they were doing it for, because it's obvious, it's self-evident. But why did they need the money? Why did they need the drugs? Why could they not find a job? Why did they not have fulfilling lives? Why do some people grow up in poor environments and some people grow up in wealthy environments? Why do people get some opportunities and others don't? Why are some people driven and some people not? Why are we here? What are we doing here? Where did we come from? What's the point to life? Why keeps going back to that ultimate question? The other five questions we can answer, and we can answer them very well. But why always leads on to other questions. So with the nature of evidence in mediumship, we're trying to figure out who they are, what their relationship is to the person who's come for a reading, where were they living, when were they living, how did they live. We want to establish what they look like, hair colour, eye colour, skin tone. And there can be different types of hair, different styles of hair and different colours of hair. The same with the complexion, different coloured eyes, different heights, builds. Some people might be quite slim through their life and put a lot of weight on later in life. Some people might be quite well built and lose a lot of weight towards the end because of an illness. All these things are specific little anecdotal, sometimes pieces of information, but together they build up a picture. And a clairvoyant isn't perfect, but they'll get a general colour of the hair, general hairstyle, general skin tone, eye colour, and the more specific they can be, the better. But even if it's general and it's not as specific as you would like it, it still points to a direction. You know, when you think hair colour, you've got people who will colour their hair, they're naturally blonde or they're coloured blonde. Some people might be more redhead, darker, brown, or they might have, you know, African hair or whatever. There's so many different hair types then and colours. Then the eyes, you've got dark brown, hazel, blue, bluey green, even grey. So there's now four-ish different eye colours that it could be. And if the hair colour is generally correct, and the eye colour is generally correct, and the skin tone is generally correct, you know, as long as we're getting a picture, then we can start establishing who's the communicator. And it's quite easy for the accusation of cold reading. You can look at the person you're giving a reading to. You know they're genetically related to the loved one in the spirit world. So you can more or less get a description of the person in the spirit world from looking at the person in front of you. But that's not always true. Because you look at my father and you look at me and we look like two different people. But he is definitely genetically my father. But I'll take after my mother more. And if someone was to describe my father in a spirit world, they wouldn't be describing me, but that relationship is definitely there. So quite often I'll be given a reading and I'll see a lady whose eyes are almost identical to the eyes of the woman in the spirit world. But people make a note of this. They go, well, you've got your grandmother's eyes. It's uncanny. And this is quite common because obviously, spirit communication is loved ones, and they do look similar to us. So we've now got to be as specific as we can with character, with the type of things people say. And a good medium who develops for a while will take on mannerisms. They may use words that the spirit person used that the medium doesn't use. They might use phrases. They might even give the exact conversation that was given in a private moment between the two people. Maybe what was written in a love letter between husband and wife, maybe the last words on a deathbed. These are often things that come through in mediumship that give the person coming for a reading very powerful evidence that their loved one is with them. And sometimes, even though it's just anecdotal evidence, to the person receiving it, that's proof. It's not proof to anyone else, it's not proof to a scientist, but it is proof to that person. Now, the nature of proof in investigation, DNA evidence can be one piece of evidence that is absolutely critical, that proves beyond a shadow of a doubt that someone did something, or that someone's the father of that child, for instance. In spiritualism, there is a type of evidence that can be very profound, but it's only profound to that person. And even in physical mediumship, where there are claims that someone can bring through the exact person, their voice, and even a manifestation of them, and these are very profound. I have seen a number of incidents in seances, but like anything, your memories can't always be trusted. You might have seen something very profound, and you knew that the strict control conditions were put in place in that seance to make sure that it wasn't malarkey, trickery. And the next morning, you're still very impressed by what you saw. But weeks, months, years later, your memories are such that you can't always be sure. But when it comes to certain powerful synchronicities and pieces of evidence that you receive from the spirit world, sometimes they stick. And when something sticks, there's a lot of truth there. If it falls away, it probably wasn't legit. Theories persist because there's truth to them. There's certain theories that we may not have completely proven yet. Some of Einstein's theories, we haven't got the smoking gun that proves them, but they persist because all the experiments have not been able to rule them out. And the nature of spiritual communication is very similar. It's more than just a theory, and it persists. It has persisted since the dawn of humankind. You look at some of the ancient Egyptians and ancient Chinese and ancient all over the world. People had this working understanding of the afterlife, of spirit. And we in our modern era find it difficult to believe because we've been so clouded with materialism and with religious dogma that it's shut us down a little bit. But the sensitive people who can provide this evidence from the spirit world, we need to understand how evidence works so that we can establish that communication. If you explore your mediumship, over and over again, you'll realize that you can't demand a particular spirit person. You can't demand what they tell you, but you can work on your clairvoyance. You can work on your clairsentience and your clairaudience and your claircognizance. And you can try to improve your ability to see, hear, and feel the spirit world. Then you'll be able to more accurately pass on the information. If you imagine that when our loved ones, they go to a different country and they arrive at the airport, they'll find a telephone, phone home and say that they've arrived safely, that you've got no need to worry and that they're okay. And that they love you. Well, if you imagine a medium is working like a telephone, and on the other side, your guide is a telephone at an airport, and they're surrounded by other people wishing to phone home. Not all those people are going to be able to use that phone very well. They're not mediums the minute they appear on the other side. They're not suddenly all enlightened spiritual beings. They've just moved on and they take with them a lot of who they were and how they were. And they want to phone home. They want to tell their loved ones that they're all right. And if it's the way I've described, like a telephone at a crowded airport, there's going to need to be some organisation to make sure people can get through. So our guides act as that organisation on that side. And we have churches and centres where we've got an organisation that arranges it on this side as well. So the nature of evidence in life is we're trying to establish who did what, where, when and how. We also want to know who built the universe. Why? What did they do? How did they do it? When did they do it? And where did they do it? Spiritual phenomena doesn't answer those questions, but it points to it. And an evidential medium will be able to prove that they have a connection with the spirit world. Then through these mediums, we get guides, give trance addresses and philosophy on life. Sometimes these spiritual mediums, they can develop automatic writing and many books can be written. The skeptics will continue to argue that it's purely anecdotal and it can't be proven. But Dr. Richard Hodgson was one of the greatest skeptics in the world. He had investigated fraudulent mediums and mediums who could not meet his demanding, strict conditions. And he very publicly mocked and ruined the reputations of many mediums. And then he discovered a medium called Lenora Piper. And Dr. Richard Hodgson, the greatest skeptic in the world, who had become very fixed in his views, declared to the Society for Psychical Research that in his investigations of Lenora Piper, he was convinced that people survive the change called death. He changed his mind based on evidence that supported the argument against his opinion. He changed his opinion based on evidence that contradicted what he believed. We should all be prepared to do that. I'm prepared to do that. I've been looking for evidence, not that just supports spiritualism, but I've been looking for the evidence that can deny it. And I've not found it. What I find is more and more evidence that supports it. So we've got to remain skeptical. We've got to be prepared to challenge our long-held beliefs and let go of them if we're given evidence that will contradict our beliefs, that supports the opposing argument. And you're not going to find it or accept it if you close your minds to it. But as I said, I'm laying down a challenge for you. Go and find the evidence that supports spiritualism and try and find the evidence that contradicts it. And you'll see a hell of a lot of smoke. You'll see a hell of a lot of evidence to support spiritual phenomena. And I'm pretty sure, because I've been looking, that you won't find the evidence to deny it. Keep an open mind. Explore mediumship. Sit in circles. Go see mediums, good, bad, and indifferent. And give the spirit world an opportunity to give you those pieces of evidence, because sometimes the piece of evidence isn't there just to establish who's communicating. Sometimes in that evidence, the spirit world have left little clues for you. And as you go on your journey, little synchronicities happen. And they may not be concrete proof to other people, but to you, they will be absolute. They will give you the conviction to know that you're a spiritual being having a physical experience, that this short life that we've got to live is extremely special and we're to make the most of it. So that's where I think the why comes in. We know who we are, we know what we are, we know where we are, we know when we are, and only we know how we are. But spiritualism should guide you into the direction to figure out why we are, why we're here, why was the universe brought to an existence, why are people born onto the earth to have these difficult lives? That's the ultimate journey. That's the ultimate question. And we may not arrive at an ultimate answer, but something will point us in the right direction. Something inside us will stir and discover and explore why we're here. Why were you born? And what was your life leading you towards learning? And that was the ultimate question with the ultimate answer. And mediumship, spiritual phenomena, and the nature of the evidence will point you in that direction. I've got no doubt.